Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Really, it's nice. That's great. Sure, sure. I don't have it. It's in the office. Sure. It's in the office, I think. But Murari is there. I think she's there.
Jai Radha Madhava.
Kunja Bihari. Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. Gopi Jana Vallabha Girivar Dhari. Gopi Jana Vallabha Girivar Dhari. Yashoda Nandana Braja Janarandana. Yashoda Nandana Braja Janarandana. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. Jayam Vishnupada Paramahamsa Parivrajakacharya Ashtotara Shatashri Srimad His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Ananta Koti Vaishnava Vrinda Ki Jai Granthraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai All glories to the assembled devotees All glories to the assembled devotees All glories to Sri Sri Guru and Gauranga Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Granthraj Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 28, Puranjana becomes a woman in the next life. Text 19. Namai anashite bhunte Nasnate snati matpara Mai rushteshu santrasta Bhartis bhartsite yatavag bhayat Namai anashite bhunkte Nasnate snati matpara Mai rushteshu santrasta Bhartsite yatavag bhayat Namai anashite bhunkte Nasnate snati matpara Mai rushteshu santrasta Bhartsite yatavag bhayat Namaya nasite bhunkte nasnate satnimat para mai rushte sutantrasta bhartsite yatavag bhayat Namaya nasite bhunkte Yasnate snati matpara Mai rushte susantrasta Vatsite yata bhagbhayat Ladies, please. Snati matpara Mai rushte susantrasta Bhartsite yata vagbhayat Namaya nasite bhunkte Nasnate snati matpara Mai rushte susantrasta Bhartsite yata vagbhayat Now, never Mai, when I, anashite, had not eaten, bhunkte, she would eat, na, never, asnate, had not taken bath, snati, she would take her bath, matpara, always devoted to me, Mai, when I, rushte, was angry, susantrasta, very much frightened, bhartsite, when I chastised, yatavak, fully controlled of words, bhayat, out of fear. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. King Puranjana then began to think of his past dealings with his wife. He recalled that his wife would not take her dinner until he had finished his, that she would not take her bath until he had finished his, and that she was always very much attached to him. So much so that if he would sometimes become angry and chastise her, she would simply remain silent and tolerate his misbehavior. Purport. A wife is always supposed to be submissive to her husband. Submission, mild behavior, and subservience are qualities in a wife which make a husband very thoughtful of her. For family life, it is very good for a husband to be attached to his wife, but it is not very good for spiritual advancement. Thus, Krishna consciousness must be established in every home. If a husband and wife are very much attached to one another in Krishna consciousness, they will both benefit because Krishna is the center of their existence. Otherwise, if the husband is too much attached to his wife, he becomes a woman in his next life. The woman, being overly attached to her husband, becomes a man in her next life. Of course, it is an advantage for a woman to become a man. But it is not at all advantageous for the man to become a woman. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chaksur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Svapadantikam Vancha Kalpaturubhyascha Krupa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivas Adi Gaura Bhaktavinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So we will talk about wonderful wives and husbands. But let's not lose track of what's happening here. This is Puranjana getting ready to leave his body. And all he can think about is his wife. The perfection of human life is to somehow or the other think of Krishna at the time of death. Meaning that one's consciousness is directed towards, absorbed in Krishna consciousness. Now, from a worldly perspective, if one thinks of his wife all the time, which is nowadays a very rare case, if he does so, then he's, he's supposed to be actually a very good man. And what makes a husband think of his wife is not necessarily her beauty, because there are women more beautiful than his wife out there in the world. And it is quite likely that if he meets someone more beautiful, then he will think about her. So Prabhupada's telling us that what makes a man think about his wife is her chastity to him. And similarly, his chastity to her. It's not that he is off the hook. So her chastity to him is what makes a relationship genuine, or one's chastity to each other makes a relationship genuine. So he is appreciating her chastity, that she would not eat if I had not eaten. She would not take a bath if I had not taken my bath, meaning I would bathe first and then she would bathe. If I was angry, mai rushte, then she would become very frightened, or she would remain silent. Bhartiste, bhartsite, when I chastise, yatavak, fully controlled, bhayat, out of fear. That means their relationship is based on respect for each other. Now, we're only talking worldly relationship right now. We haven't even come to transcendental. So from a worldly perspective, these are the qualities that make a wife chaste. That she is, Prabhupada says, submissive, mild in behavior, and subservient. Now, in 2012, these words don't have a place in our lexicon, because these are indicators of slavery. Subservient, oh, mild behavior, oh no. Submission, forget about it. What about the girl power? But the real relationship, and it's not about women being submissive to men, that's not the point being made here. The point that we need to understand is that a soul within a woman's body or a soul within a man's body naturally exhibit certain qualities. Just as a soul in a tiger's body does not bleat like a sheep, right? It has to roar like a tiger. It has black stripes and it runs after deer. You cannot say the tiger is a bad animal. It's a soul within that body. Just as a soul within the body of a lizard or within the body of an insect that moves in the grossest of places, That's how it's supposed to behave in that body. So how is a man supposed to behave in, or soul in a man's body be supposed to behave? Here are the characteristics. How is a soul in a woman's body supposed to behave? Here are the characteristics. And these characteristics are important so that the time within that body can be fully utilized without further karmic reactions. So the best utilization of a woman's body, or the opportunity, or however, the time, the best utilization of the time for the soul within the woman's body is through these qualities. Submissiveness, subservience, and mild behavior. When we read these things, we can understand the state of things today. Like, there is no concept of mild behavior because of lack of training. So, mai anashite bhungte. Nowadays, wives, now I'm generalizing here, so if I get beat up for this at some point in time, and that's fine. Nowadays, wives are not trained into thinking, hey, has the husband eaten? When the husband returns home, oh, whatever, you know, I'm back. Yeah, see if there's some food in the refrigerator. If not, you know, order takeout or something. Oh, what would you like to eat, honey? I already had my dinner or something. Or you came late, I finished my dinner, you came late, whatever. And it says, and I can go more on this if you like, but if he didn't bathe, she wouldn't bathe, or he would bathe first. So nowadays, people don't bathe. That means even the wives don't bathe. So both are mochi, Mr. and Mrs. Mochi, very mochi. The idea is that she puts his needs first. So in any relationship, the operative principle is love or affection, or more importantly, service, because love is expressed as service. So a relationship can only thrive when one party in the relationship puts the needs of the other party first. A relationship becomes selfish when each party is thinking about their own needs first. It's not that their needs are not important. They are important. And it's not that a person should abandon their needs. It's not healthy, unless one is an absolutely pure devotee. As a normal human being, one cannot abandon their own needs. For example, let's take a husband and wife or a parent-child relationship. And if only the child has to be fed, and that's all the mother is thinking about, without thinking about her own nourishment, then a few days later the child might not have a mother. Or the mother might get hospitalized. So she needs to eat, she needs to rest. She needs her time. But her needs for herself are always secondary to the child's needs, because it's a loving relationship, like that. So chastity in a wife is described here, that his needs were always first. So Prabhupada saying that when there is such a relationship between husband and wife, the husband becomes very attached to his wife. There is a slight problem here. Such attachment is not healthy. While it is glorified and it is very important from a worldly perspective, it is not healthy from a spiritual perspective. So naturally, because our minds are trained into thinking binary, that means either zero or one. So if something is not good, that means it has to be bad. So if attachment is troublesome, then indifference is better. So Prabhupada says, however, Krishna consciousness must be established in every home. If a husband and wife are very much attached to one another in Krishna consciousness, they will both benefit because Krishna is the center of that relationship. So an attachment for the wife by a husband or attachment for the husband by a wife are not unhealthy when Krishna is the center of that relationship. Because in that attachment there is service, and in that attachment there is the real sense of detachment. The real sense of detachment is that each other's service to one another does not cloud an individual's relationship with Krishna. I'll say it again differently. A husband should serve the wife in Krishna consciousness in such a way that the wife's attachment for Krishna grows. And she can be attached to him for that reason. And similarly, a wife should serve the husband in such a way that his attachment and attraction to Krishna should grow. And he can be attached to her for that reason. Because at the time of death, each person has to remember Krishna. That's the point. And when there is this relationship of mutual service, understanding that Krishna is the center of that relationship, then one is not overcome by fear. Overly overcome by fear. Oh, what will happen to my wife? What will happen to my children? What will happen to my property? Who will take care of them? What have I done? Maybe $1 million is not sufficient for them. Maybe it should be 2. Maybe $50,000 is not sufficient. I should have done something. What have I done? Maybe I should have all of this. So in that there is forgetfulness of Krishna as the maintainer. When Krishna can maintain an ant and maintain an elephant, he can also maintain a wife and a few children. It's not impossible. In fact, he is anyway doing it. What if we are not aware how he is doing it? Or one is not aware that Krishna is the ultimate maintainer. One falsely thinks, I am the maintainer. I am the husband. Therefore, I am the maintainer. I am Bharata. Bharata means one who maintains. Therefore, we recite this verse. Gopi Bhartur Padakamalayor Dasa Dasa Anudasa. That I am the servant of the servant of the servant of the maintainer of the gopis. Husband means maintainer. He takes the responsibility of maintaining the family. So attachment for each other is only effectual, only meaningful when each other can remember Krishna. When each person can remember Krishna. That is the meaning of a relationship. Any relationship. If Krishna gets clouded in that relationship is material. If Krishna remains at the center of that relationship is spiritual. That means each party, when we say, I want to have a relationship with someone, then it is our responsibility to somehow or the other remind the other person about Krishna, or keep Krishna as the center of that interaction or interactions. To the degree Krishna is not there, to that degree it's material. There is a risk in having even a good wife and husband relationship that is devoid of Krishna. That risk is the husband who is too attached to his wife becomes a woman in his next life. And a wife who's too attached to her husband becomes a man in her next life. So in this world, people glorify very good husband-wife relationships because it's rare nowadays. If someone celebrates their 25th wedding anniversary, it is published in the newspaper. Oh, 25 years. And the first question they ask, with the same woman? And they even say, 25 years with the same woman, as if that's a big achievement. Because it's become rare that someone will stay with each other. It is difficult to stay with each other, not because circumstances changed. It's because the basis in which they got together in the first place, that itself is wrong. The reason people get together in the first place is bodily attraction. Or something. Yeah, mostly sense gratification, mutual sense gratification. She looked pretty, he looked very good looking, he swept me off my feet, she was like this, he was like that, her eyes sparkled, my eyes sparkled, blah blah, and then a year later they don't even stay together. Because the sparkle goes away, the fizz went away, the beauty turned to, he turned into a beast and he became something. Oh, behind her beauty was all her really witch-like behavior. So the reasons people get together is very superficial. So naturally it cannot sustain. And in the case that it does sustain, then it is glorified. Whoa, 25 years. Like that. So the reasons from the reason that we don't forget, or the theme that is supposed to be constantly playing in the background. It's the refrain that there is a purpose to the human form of life. The purpose is Krishna consciousness. In every activity, that the purpose be clear. The difficulty is that very soon we become absent. Even after hearing so much, even after knowing so much, we become absent. One of the things I've been thinking about myself is how quickly I can become absent. From one activity to another activity, Krishna is easily forgotten or not even remembered. If he is forgotten, then at least it assumes that at some point in time we had remembered him. He's not even remembered. And on a daily basis, when things just happen as a matter of habit or routine, then Krishna is very easily forgotten. So this purpose of life, the ultimate purpose of life, is Krishna consciousness. That should be the strong refrain in all activities, especially in the activities that are very high, either in the benefit that they give or in the risk that comes from them. This attachment for husband or wife. Puranjana, although very pious, is attached to his wife. From a worldly perspective, that's very good. But from a point of Krishna consciousness, that's not very good. That attachment without Krishna is not very good. Just like in this world, having money is a nice thing. People have money, so they have facilities. Having education, you can do things in this world. Having beauty, you become famous, attractive, etc. Being born in a wonderful family, that has credit, that has some merit in this world. But without Krishna, all these assets actually become severe liabilities. Janma Aishwarya Shuta Shri. Good birth, wealth, good education, and beauty. These are good assets that can be used in Krishna's service if there is there. If one is properly connected to Krishna, otherwise, Yedamana Madhapuman, one can easily become maddened by these possessions. These are not necessary for becoming Krishna conscious. One doesn't have to be born in a great family. One doesn't have to have, big, massive degrees. One doesn't have to have. One doesn't have to have a lot of opulence and wealth to serve Krishna. One doesn't have to have great beauty to serve Krishna. In the absence of opulence, in that verse in the Bhagavad Gita 9th chapter, yat karoshi yadashnasi yat juhoshi dadasiyat, and previous to that is patram pushpam phalam toyam. Prabhupada says Krishna is asking for things that are so easily available. A leaf, a fruit, a little water, a flower. And one doesn't have to be a rich man to gather these things to serve him. And he's also not asking for all of these in plural. He's asking for them in singular. He says patram, not patrani, which means many leaves. He says pushpam, not pushpani. Phalam, not phalani. One fruit, one leaf, one flower is sufficient to please him. And Prabhupada writes in this purport, this shows that one does not have to have great wealth to serve Krishna. Any poor man, anyone can serve Krishna. One doesn't have to have a great birth. There are so many examples of Krishna's wonderful devotees who came from the most horrendous births. Valmiki came from a family of dacoits. Mrigari came from the, you know, really treacherous family of hunters. So many such examples that Krishna consciousness can transform. Although there are some persons with great births who have really become very degraded. Jagai and Madhai were born in Brahmana families, but really degraded in behavior. They were transformed. Nala Kuvera and Manigriva, the sons of Kubera, the treasurer of the heavenly realm, they were transformed. Yudhishthir Maharaj, Dhruva Maharaj, all great personalities, whether great birth or not great birth, irrelevant. Whether wealthy or very poor, irrelevant. Krishna's devotees were among the richest of persons. Krishna's devotees were among the poorest of persons. Kolavecha Sridhar, Sudama Brahmana. Shruta, educated. Some of Krishna's devotees are from a worldly perspective. In fact, all of Krishna's devotees are the most educated from a worldly perspective. Krishna's devotees came from the highest scholarly classes of people. Rupa Goswami, Sanatan Goswami, in the Saraswat Brahman families. Madhvacharya, Ramanujacharya, great, great households. At the same time, there are also persons who were illiterate from a worldly perspective. Gaurakishordas Babaji, or the Brahmana in Sri Rangam, who didn't know whether he was holding the book upside down, upright, whatever. But he was in transcendental ecstasy, just holding the Bhagavad Gita. Or beauty. Krishna's devotees came from the category of extremely beautiful persons. Some of the descriptions of their beauty is astonishing, like unimaginable beauty. But Krishna also had devotees that, from a worldly perspective, were not beautiful at all. Kubja. Kubja had a hunchback, really not even good looking, but she had such eagerness to serve Krishna. So the real high birth, the real birth or great tradition, the real education, the real wealth, the real beauty is to be a devotee of Krishna. That is the success of life, and that attachment to each other in such a manner is uplifting, is the meaning of life. Otherwise, all these assets make a person very proud and forgetful of Krishna. Then Prabhupada says, of course, it is an advantage for a woman to become a man, because for the soul in the man's body, the ability to express Krishna consciousness to its highest perfection is a lot easier. With a woman's body, there are limitations. Ask our pujaris, they'll tell you. There are limitations. Not in consciousness, but in consciousness as well. There are examples of some of the greatest of devotees of Krishna who were women. Queen Kunti. We just spoke on Sunday. Queen Kunti, Mother Yashoda, Mother Sachi Devi, Dhruva Maharaj's mother, etc. But the same personalities like Queen Kunti, she offers a prayer. Kadam pashyehi mahistriyaha. We are limited. Although she is exalted par excellence, but she recognizes that being in a woman's body has its limitations. There's nothing against women, it's just the limitation that exists in its ability for the consciousness to fully manifest. Not that there are no examples, there are. But the man's body, a male body, facilitates. Because a woman by nature, as we have understood from Prabhupada's teachings, needs protection. For example, a woman cannot renounce and go to the forest and meditate in the forest. She needs shelter. She needs, but her success of Krishna consciousness comes from being in a protected environment, in a sheltered environment. Therefore, women are not awarded sannyas, etc. So as Prabhupada says, that if a woman becomes attached to her husband, the advantage is she will get a man's body. So the progression from there is possible. But it is not at all advantageous for the man to become a woman. So it's getting a body which is not suitable or not conducive for the best expression of Krishna consciousness, for the best pursuit of spiritual life. So there must be attachment with Krishna in the center. That's the teaching. Otherwise, grihastha life is very risky, very dangerous. It is necessity for women. It's a necessity. But for men, if it is not properly executed, then it becomes a bane, a stumbling block. So, those are some thoughts. Any comments, questions? Raktak Prabhu?
Get married and they achieve, if they achieve pure devotional service,
what I like the way you say if.
You know, if they do. Right?
When they do.
Yeah. What is their fate in the future, like in a future life? Would there be any interaction, or they just go their separate ways?
Depends on the degree of Krishna consciousness. For very pure devotees, they go back to Godhead. And in Godhead, there is nothing like wife-husband type worldly relationship.
But there'll be friendship. They'll have friendships. They'll have a continued friendship.
That's the Christian idea. Mm-hmm. However, there are also different destinations for very pious wives and husbands. That is why there's this whole idea of sati. In the very old Vedic tradition, the word sati also meant, sati means very chaste. And her chastity was so strong towards her husband that if the husband died and the body was cremated, she would enter the fire with him. It is described that for such piety, they're born in the heavenly realm as husband and wife, and they can continue. So that kind of chastity existed. It doesn't exist anymore. So pious grahasthas go to certain planets within the universe where they can continue as husband and wife. It's not necessary, but they can. For transcendence, the rules don't apply. The individual souls.
Thank you.
Make us know. Himanshu Prabhu.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
I don't want to juxtapose a material conception on the spiritual reality, but I was wondering if you could explain if the the qualities of the female body, are they at all in like more similar to the qualities of Prakriti, or not really, nothing to do with each other?
Nature. No. There are qualities that are considered feminine, and Krishna describes or enlists them in, or lists them out in the Bhagavad Gita. Sweet speech, shyness, there are a few others, I forget. He describes them. But cannot say nature is supposed to be like this. Because ultimately, whether it's a man's body or a woman's body, it is Prakriti. Both are nature. In fact, even the soul is Prakriti. But there is a misconception because of false ego to think of Purusha. And it's not that only the soul in the male body thinks of himself as Purusha. The soul in the female body also thinks as Purusha, because he wants to, that soul wants to enjoy or exploit matter. Because the soul is a part and parcel of Krishna, neither woman nor man. From a worldly biological classification. It's not male or female. Both are Prakriti. I mean, one soul in this body, another soul in that body, both are Prakriti. Yeah, Richard Prabhu.
Krishna Prabhu. I wanted to know if you could speak on, in sadhana bhakti, we regulate things like our sleeping time, for instance. We try to. And how these regulations become obstacles in wanting to have deeper levels of commitment to relationships, and having faith that even what would be considered a worldly material negative outcome, for instance, you know, someone stays up half the night to do a service, and the next day they're dead tired for Mangal Arati, for instance. How, I'm wondering if proper conception is that, you know, if Krishna wants me to be tired tomorrow, then that's the way it'll be, and if he keeps me awake, then that's the way it'll be also. But my duty, my true desire is to execute the service right now. I'm not saying I'm there, but it's something that I think we probably all toy with in our mind of wanting to be more committed, and then thinking about, you know, the maintenance and how much are we really relying on the empowerment of Krishna. I wanted to know if you could talk about that breaking through.
Right. A stumbling block on the path of pure devotional service is Niyamagraha. Niyama agraha means indifference or rejection or not following of the proper rules and regulations. Niyama agraha means being overly attached to rules and regulations and forgetting the purpose why one is following the rules and regulations. Both are stumbling blocks. So one has to understand that these rules and regulations are meant only to help us remember Krishna. Otherwise, in and of themselves, they have no meaning. In and of themselves, they remain material or worldly. They may be in the mode of goodness, but they're still worldly. Taking a bath every day, wearing clean clothes every day, it's a material event. But it is done for the purpose of serving Krishna. Therefore, it is transcendental. Or it allows for better execution of Krishna consciousness. while that is happening, there is also a sense of what is emergency. Suppose one of our devotees is sick, and caring for that devotee, one doesn't say, "Oh, you have high fever, and you know you need attention, but you know what, I need to go for Mangal Arati, so if you're alive tomorrow morning, I'll see you at 5 o'clock or between a little period when I get a break." But if you're living our life always in emergency, then that needs to be looked at as to what is wrong in our life. Everything is an emergency. Once in a while, emergencies are emergencies. And Krishna looks at how we're serving him. That's more important. Or what's more important is, are we remembering Krishna? Are we in the mood of serving Krishna and Krishna's devotees? That's more important. So being attached to something, another question to ask ourselves, I'm just giving multiple things to think. Another thing to ask ourselves is, why am I attached to this rule? Why am I attached to this regulation? Oftentimes, the answer is because it pleases me, because I am happy from this. And so it becomes a self-fulfilling thing. So here in the context of being submissive, what is important is not my happiness, but Krishna's happiness. Krishna's happy when we follow his system, no doubt about it. But we follow it for his happiness. When that is considered, then, you know, whatever we do has meaning behind it, or has the ultimate purpose behind it. Then it's not so much, was I here, not here, for example. Andrew Prabhu and then Gokulananda.
Hare Krishna, Prahub.
Hare Krishna.
There's two points I wanted to bring up. Growing up here in America, many times with my different wives, they were alpha women that actually decided, you know, they wanted me and at whatever cost that was to get there. But the point of that is my last wife is just retired last month, and her husband is 40 years older than her. He couldn't help her. She has no son. Yet me staying her friend through the years, even being divorced, she doesn't want me to know where she's going to be now that she's retired. So she is, you know, going to be out there on her own taking care of herself. So that is one concept that may be changing in women in America. But what I was really thinking about was if a marriage is really arranged and it's strong in Krishna consciousness, isn't that where if the wife sees that I'm really taking a fall and Maya's got a hold of me, she's going to help me because she's my wife and she doesn't want this to become a past fact, if you follow what I'm saying?
Yes. So it's each other's duty.
It just seems to me that the people I've associated with out west, that their arranged marriages and their effort together as Krishna conscious and bringing their children up very Krishna conscious, which they do out there, keeps them so bonded together. It's
not
amazing.
That it's arranged. What keeps them bonded is not that it is arranged. What keeps them bonded is who arranged it and why it was arranged.
Okay.
Who arranged it means either the devotees, the spiritual master arranged it. And for what purpose? For cultivation of Krishna consciousness without the mind being disturbed. That's why. Arranged or not, that's not the criterion. Arranged because that there is other viewers or other considerations other than just bodily attraction. So it has more than one person looking at.
It's not that just chemical attraction and right. I gotta have you and
yes.
But it just seems that they really do help each other in times of need.
Well, that's the meaning
of
marriage.
That's a beautiful thing to me that an arranged marriage, you know, would take someone to that place.
Correct. Correct. Because in arranging a marriage, it is other things are also considered. Natures, families, lifestyles, individual personalities versus she's good looking and she's very attractive or he's good looking and attractive. Gokulananda Prabhu.
I have a question in my mind, but I have to express it. I will try.
Okay.
So we have the difference between man and woman. I can see that there are differences that are like universal behind culture, like sexual organs, and the ladies can have babies and men can have babies. So even it doesn't matter if there is a lady training woman in Vedic culture or Western nowadays society.
Correct.
This won't change.
Hopefully. But
of course, they can do some experiments. But then there are qualities like shyness and other. When we talk about female and male,
right.
It seems that it's not nature, but it's something that is settled by culture. For instance, if a man or a woman, according to the culture they are trained, they will express different qualities. So I want to know how those qualities that Vedic culture promotes, for example, in women, like chastity and being subservient, can help in give freedom or get advantage on their limitations. In the same, like a man body may have also limitation by training. For example, brahmacharya may give more freedom to practice a spiritual life.
Yes.
So why are important those qualities? Because nowadays doesn't seem to be important for our culture. So if we know what are the limitations and a universal thing that you cannot change, then those qualities we know when are appropriate and where are not. For example, Prabhupada allowed ladies to live in temples, but according to other rules in Vedic culture, they cannot live in temples or they cannot worship deities, etc. But Prabhupada was like very expert. So I want to know if those.
Thank you.
You can enlighten us.
So there are certain things that are universal in terms of differences between male and female. Right? You said one is sexual organs, the other is women give birth to children, men don't. However, there are also qualities that are also feminine and masculine. But to say that all females or all women must have these qualities, all men should have these qualities, does not make sense when you consider how three modes of nature work. The three modes of nature bring forth variety. And each body is a very unique permutation and combination of three modes of nature according to karma. So there can be a perfectly masculine woman, and there can be a perfectly effeminate man. All their behaviors and tendencies are feminine, except that they're in a man's body. All their behaviors and this could be very masculine, they're in a woman's body. There can be a little blend of this. There can be a woman who's completely feminine, a man who's completely masculine, all sorts. It can be anything. Yet, Krishna describes certain qualities that are feminine. So the second point then is, in today's situation, spiritual life and culture are not connected. Because people's varna or psychophysical nature is very disconnected from their spiritual life or their personalities. I shouldn't say personality. From their ways of life. Most cultures are historical byproducts or historical byproducts or consequences of historical events. And that's how cultures and subcultures have come into being. If you look at history, even 2,000-year-old history, because real cultures that are beyond 2,000 years are not even extant. They're not even alive. We call it Hinduism. It is some real trickling, diluted forms of some Vedic lifestyle, or Vedic culture. So today what we call Hinduism is not Vedic culture. It's a complete bogus khichdi of all sorts of things. Or this culture, that culture. It's mostly consequences of historical events. Real culture follows spiritual pursuit. Real culture follows the higher purposes of life. Therefore, Varnashram. Varnashram has a particular purpose. It is to enhance or support spiritual pursuits, specifically to serve or please Vishnu. So society and culture was naturally organized according to one's natures and tendencies. So you will find that cultures follow the spiritual path. But we cannot take today's situation and say things are different. Well, they are naturally different because with the Kali Yuga, the propagation of the modes of nature is such that everything gets separated from the actual spiritual path. So nowadays, the so-called cultures are not according to one's psychophysical nature. It's according to the, I guess, moral or even sociological circumstances. So women's liberation became a big thing because the women were oppressed. Or certain men wanted the women to be in the forefront, whatever is the situation. I'm not an expert at sociological trends, so I don't want to misquote. But, so naturally, when one behaves in certain manners, one cultivates certain qualities because one is influenced by those modes of nature. So the real psychophysical nature gets hidden somewhere. Or they have to do certain things. Like suppose there is a person who's very shy by nature, man or woman. But they have to survive in this world. And for to survive in this world, you got to be competitive, you got to be there, you have to speak up and say some things. Otherwise, you cannot do anything in life. So they get into these workshops and training and trying to overcome their whatever difficulties, and they have to speak up. And the frustration that they go through, or they have to put on an extra layer of mask that who they are not. like in this Western culture, a man crying is like, huh, why are you crying? You're a man. Men don't cry. You're not a man if you cry. Our acharyas are shedding tears like anything, and they're talking of all these emotions and how they're feeling connected to Krishna. And all. Wow, what is all this? Weakness, feminine, what is this? Come on, be a man. Arjuna, sharire me veputu, oh, my body is trembling, I have tears running down my cheeks and my gandiva is falling from my hand, I will not fight. Oh, come on, be a man. Because we have stereotypes, we have stereotyped cultures and personalities. That is what the we're looking at it from this perspective. From what is today, we're trying to get a picture of what is the Vedic culture, true Vedic culture. But because that's called ascending system of knowledge, we will get a wrong picture. Therefore, we look from the eyes of Shastra and Parampara because we get a descending picture. That is normal, this is abnormal. From our perspective, this is normal and we're looking at something and it seems abnormal. Make sense? Okay. Famous last words.
Recently I read news that President Obama, he allowed, means he support for the gay marriage. So my question is, so now we are discussing about the man and woman relationship, but when it is so abnormal, that means so degraded, the society is now supporting to gay marriage. So what will be their result? How can they come to Krishna consciousness or to go back to Godhead? If the people, they will be so much degraded, if you know, among same-sex marriage.
It's no different from any other degradation like meat eating. How can a cow killer become Krishna conscious? By the association of a devotee and by taking up of Krishna consciousness. Anything can. That's what my lecture, that's what we spoke. It does not matter what condition, however low or high a person may be from a worldly perspective, it's irrelevant. By the association, upashramashraya, sudhyanti prabhavishnave namaha, that if they can take the shelter of those who are sheltered at the lotus feet of Krishna, then it doesn't matter. It does not matter whether they are gay, lesbian, meat eaters, they are, you know, kirata, hunandra, whatever they may be, it's irrelevant. As long as they take shelter of a devotee. Is it easy or difficult? Well, any circumstance is difficult as a challenge because the modes of nature are heavy. It is not true that someone who's born in a Brahmana family can very easily become a devotee. It's not true because they're attached to piety. It is not true that one who's very educated will become a very good devotee. Not true at all. You understand? So it's also not true that one who's not educated or one who is completely, you know, like a dacoit cannot become a pure devotee. Can. Anything is possible by the mercy of a pure devotee. It's possible. And there are so many examples. Kushakarta Prabhu, perfect example. We've spoken about Crazy Pete so many times. You know the story? Okay, since you brought this let's end it with something higher than... So there was a devotee in the Los Angeles temple who was like totally zoned out, you know. His eyes were, they could never focus on something. His hair was all over the place and it was like that. And the devotees used to call him Crazy Pete. and nobody would want to be anywhere near Crazy Pete. And he was really so crazy that he would sit with his feet or legs outstretched along the path that Prabhupada would walk. But every time Prabhupada would come down the stairs in his, you know, totally disillusioned stupor, that means in his intoxicated state, however he was, he would move his legs to let Prabhupada pass. So some devotees complained to Prabhupada. He is a nuisance, can we ask him to go? Prabhupada said, no, no, he's there. He offers obeisances, he's attracted, let him be there. And so Giriraj Maharaj then left LA and went somewhere for a few years, and then he came back after about 15 years, 17 years, something, I can't remember. And he said, all the devotees, he was happy to meet them, and he suddenly remembered, where is Crazy Pete? And they said, oh, you don't know what transformation Crazy Pete has had. Because Prabhupada accepted him. Crazy Pete became straightened up, cleaned up, shaved up, you know, started chanting Hare Krishna, and later went on to become Kushakrata Prabhu, who then resided in Vrindavan and translated all the great works of the previous acharyas, Padyavali and so many other books. Anything is possible. Mukam karoti vachalam. So one should not be worried about, oh, they have this condition, they have that condition. That's irrelevant. If they take shelter of a devotee, anything can happen. They can become pure devotees. And there's so many examples. Yeah? Thank you. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.